Today on The Journey with Steve DeWitt.
Think of Joshua, and Joshua's raring to go into the promised land. And Joshua's, okay, here's the battle plan. Here's what we're going to do. God comes to him and says, I want you now to go and to circumcise the entire army. Joshua says, you want me to what? There was nothing about it that made any sense to accomplish what they thought God wanted to accomplish, and that was the conquest. And yet, obedience always makes sense to God.
What's the greatest threat to your spiritual life? Today on The Journey with Pastor Steve DeWitt, we'll uncover one of the believer's most dangerous enemies, and the answer may surprise you. Today's teaching continues our Joshua series with a new message titled, New Ceremonies, Old Obediences, from Joshua chapter 5. God commands his people to remember his power, and he values our obedience. Through river stones, manna, and the Passover, he invites us to deeper trust, lasting faith, and renewed hearts. Stay with us. We've got a lot to cover here on The Journey. Here now is Pastor Steve.
This morning we study Joshua chapter 4, which is basically the retelling of chapter 3, which is the story of the crossing of the Jordan River. And in this chapter, we discovered that there was a subplot to the crossing. There was something else going on that we didn't realize. And that the command came from God to Joshua, who was then told to tell 12 men to go into the Jordan River and to gather up 12 stones. And we're like, and what is he going to use these 12 stones for? Well, later in the chapter, we discovered that God had Joshua set up two piles. One pile right in the middle of the Jordan River where the priests were standing with the ark is a pile of 12 stones that Joshua set up. The other 12 are taken to Gilgal, where Joshua set up these 12 stones and preached a sermon. And in this sermon, he exhorted the people that they were to use these stones as a sign and as a memorial to future generations, that they may know that the hand of God is powerful, and that also all the world may know, all the nations may know who God is, and that they may fear him. And that these stones would be a lasting monument to what God had done, much like a flag that we place on the moon, saying, we were here, and this took place. And this morning, we moved into our application time, where we talked about the fact that our greatest enemy as Christians is not liberal theology, while that is an enemy. It's not satanic attacks, although that is serious, that our greatest enemy is the gradual decline of our hearts with the Lord, in which we forget all of the benefits and all of the wonders of what he has done for us. And we talked about how God has given us things to remember. This cup is the new covenant of my blood. Do this in remembrance of me. The baptismal trough, the scriptures, fellowship with one another as we spur one another on toward love and good deeds. So our greatest enemy is forgetfulness. We also talked about the fact that God's design for discipleship is the family. And I got to tell you, I had many men come up to me afterwards and share with me how much they appreciated those comments. And I want to tell you this, if you're here tonight, and as we talk about the fact that men, you are responsible to God for the discipleship of your family, and you have a burden on that, and you wonder, how can I get better? How can I work at this? There's enough men that I've talked to that we could have a nice little men's study for a while on that topic. If you're interested, come see me. Come see me later. But that God's design for discipleship is the family. And we even find a threefold approach to teaching your kids that Joshua employs by rehearsing redemptive events. Your kids ought to understand the cross and what happened with the cross. They ought to understand what happened with Joseph and all the narrative that we find in the Old Testament. And to teach them the why. Lots of people in hell will know all the answers to Bible trivia. It's up to us to tell them why this is significant in their life, and then also to call them to obedience, the so what of this knowledge. Then we talked and moved to the fact that God is still in the business of building monuments, although he's not in the business of building stone monuments. He's doing living stones. And that here today, tonight even, we're just a pile of rocks, a pile of living stones in which tonight we leave this place, we go out into our world, and we act as memorial, as living stones to this world, that they may know and they may sing the praises of God, and so that we can add to the rock pile. It's a good approach to evangelism. Now, that was this morning, which leads to tonight in a message that I have entitled Old Ceremonies, New Obedience. Joshua chapter 5. The first 12 verses of chapter 5 focus in upon the renewal of two ceremonies, one of which is about 600 years old, the other of which is about 40 years old, both of which had been neglected. So here we are, beginning now in Joshua chapter 5, beginning with verse 1. It says this, "Now when all the Amorite kings west of the Jordan and all the Canaanite kings along the coast heard how the Lord had dried up the Jordan before the Israelites until we had crossed over, their hearts melted and they no longer had the courage to face the Israelites." Now we find that two groups are named here, the Amorites and the Canaanites. The Amorites would have been those people that would have lived in the mountainous area. The Canaanites were those that lived along the coast. But really, it's a general statement like this. The people west of the Mississippi, the people east of the Mississippi, the entire nation was melting in fear because of us. It's just a broad statement that they're all afraid of what they're going to do. The word therefore melted literally means sinking. Their hearts were sinking. I'm melting. You remember that from The Wizard of Oz, sort of that concept right there. Their hearts were melting before them. You might say they had a sinking feeling that they were in big trouble, is what they were experiencing. And the result of this is that they didn't have any courage, which is an interesting contrast with chapter 3, or actually chapter 1. What did God say? Be strong and courageous for what? I am with you. Here we find the Canaanites, what? I'm melting, and they are without courage, which there's a point here for us. Scripture says the righteous are as bold as a lion. If God is for us, who can be against us? The point is this, if God is on our side, we don't have anything to fear, and we'll leave it to the forces of darkness to be afraid, not us. We have courage. God is on our side. Now, that's verse 1, in which we find the crossing's effect on the ites, as we have called them. Now we move to God's command and Israel's obedience. Again, we find this sort of approach. God tells Joshua what he wants him to do. Joshua tells the people what God told him they're supposed to do. The people obey. Same thing is happening here. Look at verse 2. "At that time, the Lord said to Joshua, 'Make flint knives and circumcise the Israelites again.'" So Joshua made flint knives and circumcised the Israelites at Gibeath-Haraloth. Now, verse 2 introduces a concept that is key to your understanding of biblical theology. It's a key aspect to what we find throughout Scripture, and it has to do with this ceremony called circumcision. And I just want to take a little excursus here and talk about circumcision with you a second, help you understand its significance. You recall back here when we began our study, we said that Abraham lived in Ur, where the Tigris and Euphrates River flow into the Persian Gulf. God called Abraham, said, "Go to a land I will show you." He said, "I'm going to make you a great nation, I'm going to give you land, and I'm going to give you people, descendants." Abram, which was his name at the time, went back over here into the Promised Land because God had told him. Once he got over here, God met with him again and renewed this covenant with him. And he did it with some specific words. He says this, "Then God said to Abraham, 'As for you, you must keep my covenant, you and your descendants after you for the generations to come. This is my covenant with you and your descendants after you, the covenant you are to keep. Every male among you shall be circumcised. You are to undergo circumcision, and it will be the sign of the covenant between me and you.'" This is our first introduction to this concept of circumcision. It goes back to Abraham. It consisted of cutting away the foreskin of an 8-day-year-old Israelite male. But its significance is this. It was an outward indication or a sign of Israel's covenant with God. So it's a relational thing, externally. And what it did is it served to distinguish the physical descendants of Abraham from all the other nations of the earth. Now, an example of how serious this was to God was something that happened in Exodus chapter 4. Later on again, so you know where we are in the story, God renews the covenant here. What happens after this? Abraham dies. Isaac now is the main man. Isaac has two boys, Jacob and Esau. Jacob has 12 boys. Joseph sold into bondage. They go down into bondage. 400 years later, God calls Moses, says, go tell Pharaoh to let my people go. He goes and performs the 10 plagues. The night that they were supposed to leave, the night that they were going to get out of town because God had done all of this, we find an interesting little scenario that takes place in Exodus chapter 4. Listen to what happened. At a lodging place on the way, the Lord met Moses and was about to kill him. Did you know this story? Did you know Moses almost died? Listen to why. But Zipporah, who was Moses' wife, took a flint knife, cut off her son's foreskin, and touched Moses' feet with it. So the Lord let him alone. Apparently, Moses had not circumcised his own son, and because of it, God was going to kill him. Does God take this seriously? Oh, yes, very much so. Moses had failed to do this with his own son. Now, skipping ahead a little bit. Again, it's a little excursus on this circumcision theme throughout the scriptures. Skipping ahead to the times of Christ. There was now in Israel this concept. If you're circumcised, you're in. If you're not, you're out. Circumcision became sort of the password to get you into the covenant. Israel had done what men oftentimes do is they take religion and they make it an external thing and they miss out on the heart of the matter. They say if externals are okay, then everything is okay. And perhaps you've been in churches like that in which the entire focus is what? Upon the external, that you look right, you dress right, you say all the right words, and yet your heart can be far from the Lord. Same thing happened in Israel. Now, this led then to verses like this. Jeremiah 31:33 says, I will write my law on their hearts. Paul says in Romans 2, no, a man is a Jew if he is one inwardly, and circumcision is a circumcision of the heart. So that circumcision becomes in the New Testament not an external requirement, but an internal requirement in which we have now entered into an internal covenant with God of the heart, because circumcision is a circumcision of the heart. Later on, just to finish this little story, later on what happens is it becomes an issue in the early church. You recall what happened is we had Jews first becoming Christians, and then suddenly the Gentiles are becoming Christians, and the Jews are saying these Gentiles have got to be circumcised or they're not going to go to heaven. They're not people of God. And there's this big debate in the early church, of course, with that, and to which Paul caustically says in Galatians 5:12, I wish these false teachers who are saying the Gentiles have to be circumcised would go all the way and emasculate themselves. So circumcision is an important theme, an important topic in biblical theology. The point here, though, in this passage, going back to what we're studying in Joshua chapter 5, is that Israel obeyed the command of the Lord. In fact, Gibeath Haraloth is simply Hebrew for hill of the foreskins, is all that it means. So Israel obeys God. Now, let's continue on with the story. In verses 4 through 7, we find the writer's explanation as to why this had to take place. Look at what it says. Now, this is why he did so, Joshua, that is. All those who came out of Egypt, all the men of military age, died in the desert on the way after leaving Egypt. All the people that came out had been circumcised, but all the people born in the desert during the journey from Egypt had not. The Israelites had moved about in the desert 40 years until all the men who were of military age when they had left Egypt had died, since they had not obeyed the Lord. For the Lord had sworn to them that they would not see the land that he had solemnly promised their fathers to give us, a land flowing with milk and honey. So he raised up their sons in their place, and these were the ones Joshua circumcised. They were still uncircumcised because they had not been circumcised on the way. Now, this guy is describing, the writer of Joshua is describing why they had to be circumcised, but he does not say why they had not been circumcised for 40 years. Why do you think that might be the case? Clear command from God that this was to be the case with all Israel, and yet they had not. Why do you think? Well, it's a little bit speculative, but I think it's reasonable to think that these people that had said, I'm not going into the promised land, had said, well, what's the point? We're going to die anyway. And their lack of obedience and their lack of faith led to a neglect of the next generation. And so they were not ready to take in the covenant promises of God, is what he is saying here in verse 7. Now, verse 8, after the whole nation had been circumcised, they remained where they were in camp until they were healed. So the whole nation is circumcised. They wait around in camp until everyone is able to fight. Verse 9 are the words of God in response to this. Then the Lord said to Joshua, today I've rolled away the reproach of Egypt from you. So the place has been called Gilgal to this day. And Gilgal basically means to roll. Okay, so that's how it got its name. God rolled away the reproach of this. So the first old ceremony that we find renewed is this ceremony of circumcision. The second one is the Passover. Look at verse 10 now. On the evening of the 14th day of the month, while camped at Gilgal on the plains of Jericho, the Israelites celebrated the Passover. The day after the Passover, that very day, they ate some of the produce of the land, unleavened bread and roasted grain. The manna stopped the day after they ate this food from the land. There was no longer any manna for the Israelites, but that year they ate of the produce of Canaan. Now, many of you are familiar with Passover and what happened. But again, we find back here, as we've walked along in the story of the Old Testament, God calls Moses. He says, go tell O Pharaoh to let my people go. He goes, performs the 10 plagues. The night before the 10th plague, God says, I want all of Israel to celebrate the Passover so that the death angel may pass over them when he sees the blood. And the story goes that they were to kill a lamb. They were to put the blood on the doorpost as a sign that without the shedding of blood, what? There is no forgiveness of sins. And that night, the death angel passed over the Israelites and went into Egypt and killed every firstborn son in all of Egypt. And that this Passover was to be a ceremony that would take place every year. But again, we find another command of God falling into neglect. Although this one now is different in their obedience. The first one was a clear command. God says, you're to be circumcised. This one, they just do it. Which I think there's even a little point here for us in the fact that sometimes those first steps of obedience are somewhat difficult, but they lead to greater levels of obedience. So the Passover is now renewed. They celebrate the Passover in the Promised Land. What an exciting day that would have been. Now, verse 11, I read, and none of you were going, yes, this is so exciting, because you weren't tuned in. Can I tell you why it's exciting, verse 11? Again, you've got to read this through Jewish mindset and put yourself in that place, the place of the Israelites. For 40 years, they had had nothing but cornflakes in the morning. Every morning, there's this manna on the ground, and they're having manna every day. And tonight, Mom, is it quail again for dinner? Yes, son, it's quail again for dinner. It was much like the Thanksgiving turkey that you all have every year, where you've got turkey on Sunday, and then on Monday, it's turkey casserole, and on Tuesday, it's turkey and gravy, and on Wednesday, it's turkey and whatever else you do with turkey. I'm not a cook, but I know you eat it for a long time. That's the thing that they had experienced. In fact, they'd had plain manna. They'd had manna casserole. They'd had manna muffins. They'd had banana bread. They'd had it every possible way for 40 years. And now, after 40 years, an exciting day, they move into the Promised Land. And it says that they ate of the produce of the land. And I'll bet they got in there and they looked around and they saw that land flowing with milk and honey and they just couldn't wait to get to the food. If you've ever traveled overseas, you know what this is like. When you go overseas for an extended period of time in like 7 to 10 days and you're over there eating this strange food, when I've done that, I can't wait for a Big Mac. That's just, I had this craving for a Big Mac. And the first thing I do when I get back into the airport, where is that McDonald's at? I want the Big Mac. 40 years. And now for the first time for some of them, fresh bread. Fresh bread, fresh grain, all of these things. This is exciting. But notice that the manna stopped once they were in the Promised Land. The manna was no longer needed. There was fruit there to supply their needs. And so what we find is then is that God is supplying their needs just like he did before, only through what we might call normal providence. So that's chapter 5, where I'm going to leave the next section till next Sunday because it fits under the category of the fall of Jericho. But that's chapter 5. It's about old commands, old ceremonies, two of them, but new obedience because this is a new generation of Israelites. This isn't your mother's Jew here. This is a new generation. Now, let's then, as we all always want to do, move to our application time. Is there anything for us to learn from this? And you may be thinking, what is he going to get out of this passage here? Circumcision, Passover, there wouldn't seem to be much. There is, friends, there is. The first thing I want you to realize tonight is that our God doesn't grade on a curve. Our God does not grade on a curve. Perhaps you're here tonight and you don't know what it means to grade on a curve. My friend Brian Wright, who's a teacher, would be happy to stand up right now. I'm not going to ask him to, though, and explain that. Basically, it's this. You find the median grade, that's a C, and you work up and down from there so that everybody is evaluated compared to everybody else. That's what it means to grade on a curve. God doesn't operate that way. For 40 years, there had been national neglect of the covenant sign and the covenant meal. Total neglect. Had not done it, had not participated at all. They were not fulfilling the stipulations of the covenant that they had entered into with God. But here's the thing. Spiritual laziness, oversight, and neglect do not change God's expectations and His promises. You probably had a teacher like this. I had lots of them growing up, where you knew that if you would complain enough as a class, if you would whine enough as a class about the test being too hard or there being too much homework for us to do, what would that teacher do? He would relent and he would drop that grading scale just enough so that everybody would get the grade they desired. You had teachers like that. I had teachers that weren't that way. In fact, this morning, my high school principal was here, who was my chemistry teacher, sat right over here on the left-hand side. He was tough as nails. I haven't had a teacher in college, seminary, anything like this guy. It was this way, and that was it. There was no mercy to be had. It was, this is the expectations, and if you don't meet these expectations, you get a B or you get a C, and there was no moving him. He was a rock. In that sense, and only in that sense, that's the way that God is. He doesn't grade on a curve. His character doesn't allow him to. He can't take his standard of holiness and say, everybody's down here, and now I'm going to lower my character so that I can somehow meet this lower lifestyle that everybody's meeting. He can't do it. Essentially, what God did here is he flunked an entire generation. He wiped them out, and he said, we're starting new. But as we start new, here's the expectation, same one as before. The difference that we find in chapter 5 is that this new class comes through with flying colors. They are quick to obey. They're doing what God has told them to do.
You're listening to The Journey with Pastor Steve DeWitt and a new message titled, Old Ceremonies, New Obediences from our Joshua series. If you'd like to hear more messages from this series or explore any of our past teachings, visit our website anytime at thejourney.fm. We've been walking with Pastor Steve through the book of Joshua, and today we were reminded how easy it is to forget what God has done, and how dangerous that forgetfulness can be for our spiritual health. So, what are the memorials in your life that keep you rooted in God's goodness? Pastor Steve reminded us that spiritual renewal begins with obedience, and that God's people are called to move forward with radical trust. Here at The Journey, we're committed to providing biblical tools and resources to support your walk with Christ. The Journey is made possible because of faithful financial partners like you. Would you consider a financial gift today? You can give online anytime at thejourney.fm or call us at 844-7-JOURNEY. That's 844-756-8763. We'd love to offer resources as gifts for our financial partners. To learn more about this month's resource, visit us online at thejourney.fm. And we want to invite you to join us in person at Bethel Church in Crown Point, Indiana. You can also visit any of our satellite campuses or join us online. No matter how you join, you'll find engaging worship, biblical teaching, and a vibrant community to call your own. Learn more at bethelweb.org. Well, I'm Tim Svoboda, and that's all the time we have together. Join us next time for more compelling teaching from Pastor Steve DeWitt here on The Journey. Today's program was produced and furnished by Bethel Church in Crown Point, Indiana.